Welcome back to Ladies with Gumption, episode 161, Generational Scars. I am May, and I'm here with
Tatiana
and Jessica.
We recap DCTV in a flash. You can always reach us at ladieswgumption.tumblr.com. Send us all your feedback to ladieswgumption@gmail.com. Find all our podcast episodes on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher. I think iHeartRadio now has us on there as well. We're over in India and Africa where they listen to podcasts as well. So you can hear us everywhere you are in the world.
That sounds so crazy.
If you go on vacation to India or Africa, which countries in Africa? Is it like Northern Africa?
It's like the whole continent.
Specifically, the whole continent. Okay. Anywhere you go on vacation, in either of those two places,
yes, and you'd like to hear our voices.
Keep up with us.
Which is excellent. So, you know, there you go. And we do have a Patreon, of course. And to all of our patrons, thank you so much for listening and subscribing to our exclusive content there. We do all things MCU. We do HBO Max premiums like Lovecraft Country. We did Watchmen, Netflix series like Shadow and Bone, The Witcher, You is coming up. Amazon series like Upload, The Boys, and Invincible. No, we didn't do Invincible yet. We want to do Invincible.
Yeah.
Eventually. We did Shang-Chi. Recently, we did Black Widow. So,
and then up next, we're going to have a special guest.
Yes.
For our Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Episode.
Yes. Longtime listener. Sonia will be joining us for our Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. recap next week on Patreon.
Yes,
so subscribe to that if you are a big fan of the show, as we are, and we will try to bring Jessica into our little circle.
They will convince.
All of that is on patreon.com/DCTVGumption if you are interested. Over in the news, we do have Shang-Chi controversy feedback, which came to us on Tumblr.
Yeah, someone was like, I love y'all's podcast, and I respectfully disagree that Awkwafina's black scent is not as harmful. And I was like, I can't speak for Tati, but I think that she meant that it's from like Disney's perspective,
right?
It's not as harmful as having their lead defend pedophilia. So,
yes, that is Tati, what I meant. It's not that as harmful. I reblogged it on my Tumblr as well to say that. But yes, I meant it's not as harmful to Disney, because that's literally the reason they hired her, right? She's right. Famous for this persona, for her behavior. That is what has made her famous in the first place. So, like, even though it is obviously harmful, culturally speaking, to individuals and to society, it is not harmful in Disney's eyes, because
right.
She wouldn't be here if not for the persona that she puts on, that she has appropriated.
Yes.
And it's not something shameful. It's not something like, she didn't like do a thing and then someone discovered that she did that thing and now everyone knows it. It's
right.
Literally what she
right.
does.
It was already a thing
day.
Before.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, she's always doing it. We can all see it. It's like, yeah. So.
And speaking of things too, there was an actor, another Asian actor who was dropped by his management for quote unquote discovering or talking about the Shang-Chi actor. Yes, on Twitter. So that was interesting, like a weird way to deal with the thing that happened, because it's not I don't remember. I'm trying to remember his name.
I think it's like Edward Huang or something.
Yes. Yes. And he was and he's talked about Simu like before, so this is not necessarily new, but yeah,
but
so
Simu
he got
like blown up before, so
yeah,
right,
yeah. So
right.
he got under fire for that, even though he didn't do anything, so so that's
her wrongful tragic. Termination,
yeah. Yeah,
anywho, yeah, just wanted to give Tati a chance to defend her honor.
Or you know sometimes it is easy to either misspeak or just not fully, you know, speak your thought, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. If I did not clarify it or make it clear before, I meant if I'm Disney, I would rather have the Awkwafina problem than the Simu Liu problem right now. But if I was Disney, Disney could be a better place. They, it wouldn't That's be true. This problem.
It would actually be magical. But back to DCTV, we have Batwoman trailer was released, and I think like a brief Legends teaser was released. But for Batwoman, we have Mad Hatter.
Legends has like their trailer as well. Yes. Yeah.
We have Mad Hatter coming to Batwoman season 3, which we did not know about. We didn't know it was a thing at all.
I did so not. And surprising. I'm so scarred missed that from casting. Gotham. I'm so now I'm scared. Like I feel like if Gotham hadn't happened, I'd be like, yeah, that's exciting. And
oh my god, like he scarred me on Gotham. I quit watching the show when he was on it, and then I came back, and then I stopped again when they had like the Pigman. I was like, no, I'm done.
Gotham left deep scars on everyone.
Deep emotional trauma scars.
But on the negative side of Batwoman, we have Wallace Day, who was over on Twitter liking tweets. So in the past, she's liked tweets about her casting, but the uptick of that came because of her appearance on Batwoman season 2. And for fans who don't want Ryan Wilder, they don't want Javicia in the role of Batwoman. So they're trying to like, you know, be like, you're so great and blah, blah, blah. So to, you know, kind of be racist online. And Wallace was liking some of those tweets. And then people were tweeting about the live that Ozzy, Anna, Candace, and Javicia were having on Instagram. And relating that back to just bad white woman behavior in DCTV and how they have undermined the black actresses in general. And so she was making not so great tweets, like laughing emojis when it wasn't appropriate. It was this weird
right.
thing.
Very weird. It was never a very weird spiral.
At all.
Yes.
She should have just sat there and ate her birthday cake.
because we're just assuming like that this is true and this did happen, she definitely should not have spoken. But right. if she somehow like, for real, like this is a total misunderstanding and like misinterpretation of whatever, then you need to actually like genuinely explain, right?
And, like, let's back up for a minute because this all started, it blew up mm-hmm. with the live and how she reacted to it. But even before then, we got, and Anon was like, I don't like Wallace. She's giving me bad vibes. And, you know,
right. And Javicia unfollowed her.
Yeah. Right. And so, like, I was like, wait a minute, because we didn't like her really from Krypton for this mm-hmm. exact same reason. Mm-hmm. But it seemed like when she joined the Batwoman cast, everybody, you know, like, welcomed her. It seemed like they were all having, like, a good time. So I'm like, girl, what'd she do? And then we got, like, Anon just, like, unloading everything in our inbox about how, like May said, she's been liking certain tweets. And it's like tweets about how great Kate Kane is, but the same people that are tweeting her this are also tweeting her and tagging, you know, Javicia and her about like, how they don't
Kate
like
Kane
Ryan.
Only fans.
Right. Kate Kane right. only fans, right? Mm-hmm. And so you see these tweets that are good tweets about Kate, but they are also the same people are tweeting about not liking Ryan, but she's yeah. still, you know, liking the tweets from these people. So it's kind of like giving validation to how they're feeling in their Kate Kane onlyness.
Exactly.
And they're
giving
also,
very much Danielle in season was tagged, one vibes.
Yes, it was Danielle season
and
one vibes
Javicia
all day long.
Was tagged, that's probably why she unfollowed her, to be honest.
Probably. Yeah, I would imagine so. And apparently, like, she's given, like, some interviews about, you know, obviously, like, she wants to drum up some interest so she can come back. But, like, and I haven't seen them because we don't follow her for reasons.
Right.
Going back to Krypton. But apparently, like, some of the interviews, they were calling her the lead, and it's like, again, it's like Danielle season one, mm-hmm. where they're like the Flash female lead, and she doesn't correct it. It's the same thing like, with like,
and this is even worse because she was in like 3 episodes,
yeah. right?
So there's no way that would have that flies, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely kind of like the Chantal, season 2 feeling too.
Yeah. So then we fast forward to Anna, Azzy, Candace, and Javicia doing the Instagram Live, which was a really great cathartic kind of Instagram Live conversation on like mental health and how they deal with being a lot of times the only Black woman in their cast or in their industry and those different feelings. And if you missed it, you can always catch it on Supergirl's Reels section. I think it's saved there. And I think it Titans also saved it too. Yeah. Nice. So you can go back and you can watch it. But during the live, that's when they were talking about, Javita was saying about how her first season of Batwoman, she would get like so depressed a little bit and had such a hard time with all of the negative hate and comments that she got. And that's when people were connecting that back to she was feeling that way because Wallace was doing all that shit. So that led to people online like Danielle Panabaker, Wallace Day, Floriana Lima, fuck y'all up, like all these like.
Well, and it's also because she said that yes, she was dealing with racist hates, but she was also saying that she had to deal with like storyline wise about Kate there, and they had to bring in a new actress, so she was dealing with that all on top of everything else and trying to establish herself, and that's what led to that. So yeah, I mean it's a lot, but we. You know, if you listen to this podcast, we don't like white woman fuckery. So it's fortunate. Very,
like, and you know what? Another thing that they said in the live, you know, just the good thing about just having other black women, black people in general, on set with you, someone that you can like look at and be like, am I crazy? Like that just happened kind of thing, and how it's like affirming for them. And I feel like in the same way, when we hear these stories, it's so affirming for us as fans, because especially all the shit that Candace went through and with the Iris West Defense Squad and you know, all the things that we were saying, and people are talking about how, you know, Candace doesn't like y'all the way y'all, you know, attack other fans, and Candace doesn't like this, and, you know, you're wrong about Danielle, she's not blah, 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 blah. So it's hearing, you know, how they're talking about, for example, always feeling like they had to take a certain level of disrespect, but then you see like your white counterparts talking crazy and all this kind of stuff, and you're like, oh wait, I can demand that too, you know. And so I'm just thinking like, that's affirming for us, because that's what we were seeing through the filters. It's like through the filter of social media, but we were still seeing it. So it's really affirming to hear them kind of like talk about these things in their own words and be like, see, knew it.
So now we know our powers of observation are not that far off. Yes.
You know, you get vibes from people, and you know, sometimes you just gotta trust your instincts. And you know, our instincts about Wallace apparently were true.
I mean, I will say I did not expect her to react in that way. I thought she'd be smart enough to go the Danielle route of just being quiet.
Yeah.
I just like,
and it's funny because some of the tweets, like, they weren't even tagging her in it. So she searches her name.
Exactly.
To see that. So
I guess the only thing I can say is like, maybe Batwoman just has a much more active fandom than even like Krypton. I remember back when I tried to be in the Krypton fandom, I like searched to like see what people are saying, and I'd find like, you know, like 20 tweets a day or some shit. It now it's like, yeah, exactly. And now it's like, you know, I guess suddenly seeing all this activity and already getting that big head of like hoping that you're gonna make it big now because you've wormed your way into one point, she's more reactionary over it, I guess.
And I feel like when we were watching Krypton, and we saw, because like it was the same kind of situation as The Flash, where you had a white leading male and a black woman as his romantic lead, and you know, she's new to the whole superhero fandom kind of thing. But then there's like this other white woman in there, and people obviously prefer her. And so like, there's a lot of hate went towards Georgina. And I think she actually, I don't know if she ever came back on social media, but I know she deactivated at one point. But Wallace was doing like that same kind of stuff of the exclusionary tactics and the liking all the stuff about her character and just pretending not to see how it implied that not to like, Georgina's character. Right. And I don't, like, I guess for me, I was like wondering, because obviously they went the route of Nyssa being Kal-El's grandmother. But I just wonder if it was always supposed to be that way, or I have a feeling that Lyta was supposed to be, you know, because that's a more interesting story if Zod and Jor-El were like half brother or like brothers or whatever.
Right.
So did they have that set up? And that makes Wallace even more, because she won that one because she had the open door of being like a love interest. So I'm like, did the writers start one way and then chicken out and just went the easier route with Nyssa because they didn't protect Georgina at all and Phantom fold over with Wallace's help, or, you know. So, again, just very grateful for Candace and all that she's had to go through, and the fact that, you know, she's dealing with wanting to quit, but then understanding that if she did, then that would just be the excuse that the network would have to be like, well, that didn't work. And so she stuck it out. Yeah. And it was
I think what's
she's
interesting
really reshaped
too.
The landscape
exactly
for Black women in this industry, at least in this genre, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's great.
Yeah, 100%. But I guess one last final thing about Wallace is that it's interesting because she was a runner up initially for Kate Kane before Ruby took on the role, right? Yeah. So it's like if the writers wanted you to be full time, they could have had you.
She was unemployed.
Yeah, right.
But Krypton was canceled before Ruby quit. So, you know, if they wanted you, girl, they would have had you, but they didn't. So.
Yeah, so there you go. But that is that on that. Moving into our episode, we're going to discuss Stargirl and Supergirl, our joys, no joys, and Lady with Gumption of the Week. And to take us away on this journey is Jessica.
Yes, so side A is Stargirl, and it's called, this side is called Guilt Trip. So, poor Yolanda. Yolanda is still reeling from the guilt she feels over killing Brainwave, and knowing that Eclipso, the apparent reincarnation of evil, is out on the loose, she turns to the church for answers on how to both reconcile her past situation and handle this new one. Would God forgive her for killing one to save the many? She did it with Brainwave. Little bit questionable about, you know, where she landed on that side of the scale, but now there's Eclipso, who is definitely, definitely evil and definitely planning to kill a lot of people. And as we saw last week, she has already made the determination that he's got to die. So is she supposed to be the one to do that? And will adding another body to her body count make it even less likely that God would forgive her? So she's going through a lot. And she's feeling increasingly isolated because she can't really talk to anyone about this because no one else has gone through the same thing that she has. She's starting having hallucinations of Brainwave and Henry. They taunt her in school hallways. And when she does end up going to the priest and opening up to the priest and to her friends, the priest snitched to her mama. And her friends, although they try to be understanding, they kind of vary on the scale of would they have done what she did. So they find it like difficult to relate, and it's causing her to retreat more into her shell and Brainwave's influence to grow. The guilt finally pushes her over the edge, and Yolanda decides to withdraw completely, shut down from Courtney, and quit the team. Meanwhile, Pat gives Mike busy work on fixing Stripe, you know, wax on, wax off, lefty loosey, righty tidy, that kind of stuff. The Shade appears to be reaching out to Barbara somehow. He's in trouble trying to reach out to her. And then finally, Eclipso sets his sights on poor sweet little Beth. Sheila and Tokski directed the episode written by Robbie Hine. What brought joy?
I thought that this was a really, really good episode. Well, first, like, for that, for that Montreal. It wasn't necessarily a good episode for Yolanda, but it was a really good Yolanda-focused episode. So I was really happy to see her getting her time to shine, even though it was, like, mostly depressing. But it was important to explore the guilt and the, like, almost PTSD that she is feeling to the fullest. And I almost feel like this episode and Supergirls were kind of thematically connected, just in that there's, like, an overlooked team member, or a team member who has been carrying a weight alone or carrying a burden alone, who then finally gets to unload that burden or finally express their feelings about it when it's just been in the background in previous episodes or throughout the season thus far. So obviously processing her hand in Brainwave's death is something that would be really, really tough for any teenager to deal with. But we also see how different it is for her to, like, Mike, for example, who did technically kill Icicle, but he does not care. So we see how different it is for Yolanda, and also what part her faith plays in that difference and in the way that she handles it.
And also family dynamics.
Yes, and also her family dynamics too, for sure. So all of that was really interesting. And the way that, I don't know if, you know, the fact that it's having me question, is this all Eclipso, what Eclipso is doing, which would make him like seem like a pervasive, unknowable, demonic, evil that is going to be really difficult to beat, right? Because it can just attack you psychologically, mentally, and then you have no defense. Or, like, is there a part of Brainwave actually in her? Are there two villains that we're going to have to tackle, one of which is inside Yolanda? I don't think that's the case, because I'm pretty sure, you know, Eclipso was like, I'm going to do a thing, and now this is the thing that Eclipso is doing. But I do like that it's making me question. I think that alone, in and of itself, is really good. Also, like, Eclipso as little Bruce continues to be super creepy. Like, in the, you know, coffee shop, you know, like, watching Yolanda and also, like, affecting, like, the waitress, right? Having her act out. So you see how easily Eclipso can manipulate people and how subtly it can happen. Also, the fact that Yolanda gave him the sucker, and then at the end, he's, like, outside, like, Beth's house or whatever, and he's got the sucker still, and I was like, I want to die. So all very good so far. I'm really liking the way that the show is dealing with Eclipso since the one episode where the climactic turn happened, but still we're off to a good midpoint. Also, I will say I am glad that Courtney stopped running away from Cameron long enough for me to be like, okay, that's kind of cute, and he definitely looks too old for her. So I don't know what they're gonna do about that, but it's nice that they're getting their little moment. But also, someone please give Cameron some de-aging makeup. All right.
It just reminds me of Dear Evan Hansen. Like, they try to do the floppy hair and this big sweater to, like, cover up the fact that you are older. Sad. Anyway, I, too, really love this episode in general. I think it was a really strong Yolanda episode. And it's kind of like what I've been waiting for several episodes now, to finally have them dig into the meat of the emotions that the characters are going through and the guilt that they're going through and all this other shit that they're going through. So I think that the episode did a great job kind of focusing on her and sort of showing how isolated she is. Despite having her friends around, she still feels so very alone. And I think that Yvette really played the emotions really, really well in this episode to showcase, like, Yolanda's guilt, her fear, kind of grappling with the fact that she might not want to be Wildcat anymore because of what she did to prevent herself from doing anything else, because she, like, the whole team scene near to the end of the episode where she's, you know, thinking that she's the one who wants to kill or has to kill Eclipso because she's done it before and there's already blood on her hands and all that weight that comes with it. And I think that the episode really showed that all really well. And even, like, the hallucinations and stuff, like, I was so confused at some point. I'm like, wait, so is this Eclipso or is this something that's happening inside her own mind and that she's just suffering from PTSD? Because we see her, like, asleep very often and she's seeing all these things, but it could also be Eclipso doing these things, like what happened at the diner with the waitress and stuff. So it's all very vague, and I like that because it just kind of keeps you guessing. And I think that, you know, in this sense, it's nice not to have a villain who is kind of like, now that Cindy's gone for a while, hopefully, and, like, Eclipso's there physically, but he doesn't have to actually appear in his physical form to create damage with the characters. And I like that that's merely messing with them psychologically, because I think that that's always much stronger than just having a fight, you know, in the school or something. So I think that it's really building towards something much bigger, and the episode did a really great job kind of focusing on Yolanda and her struggles, and then kind of foreshadowing that we're going to get, like, one episode each for each character to kind of focus on what they've been going through. And I really, really love that. It makes for a strong season. I just really like the fact that Courtney is, like, despite everything, she's still trying to be there for Yolanda, even though she can't fully understand what it means to have killed someone and the guilt that, you know, weighs on her, but she's still trying to be a good friend. And I did like, you know, it was cute for what it was, her and Cameron. And I'm glad that, you know, Cameron finally got her to, like, be around a little bit, and, you know, while in their downtime, I guess, between looking for Eclipse or whatever. So that was cute. And I continued to like Mike and Pat training and like even the whole wrench thing. I was like, damn, Pat's pretty strong. So all of that was really great. I think it builds stronger relationships for the season and even like breaks them up to deliver, you know, more thoughtful and realistic like character dynamics after everything that happened.
Don't fall for Pets. Don't give in, girl.
Thinking right. Thoughts.
No, just chewing thoughts. I love this episode. I thought it was an excellent Yelena-focused episode. It was a great character episode. I love that we finally get to explore more of the guilt that she felt after killing Brainwave. One, because I feel like in the hierarchy of attention paid to the kids, Rurik is at the bottom. But I feel like Yelena was just above him. Like, you know, Courtney and Beth have gotten the most consistent story, like through storylines from like all the episodes. And we saw that Yelena was struggling in the premiere, but we hadn't really gotten as much of that. So I love that we got all of that in this episode. I love how, especially because of her comment last week, where she's like, you know, we need to kill Eclipso. He needs to die. And I was like, that was one of my dislikes. I'm like, I don't like that she had to say that because she's already dealing with the fact that she killed Brainwave. So I like that is addressed in this episode as well. I love how the church and Yelena's faith plays into her struggle and understanding how to cope, because killing someone just in general is insane to try to wrap your mind around, whether you did it because of self-defense or whatever the situation is. It does a lot to change a person. And she's a kid. And, you know, we're talking about the way that it happened. You know, yes, he was a bad person and probably would have continued to do bad things. But in the terms of, is this self-defense, life or death situation, we know it wasn't necessarily that. And I think that's what she's been really, that's the part of it that's really been struggling with. Because Courtney's, defense is like, oh, yeah, it was self-defense. And she's like, you know, it's not necessarily true. So does that make her more bad that she didn't have to kill him, but she did anyway? And so like going to the church and how her faith is so important to her, you know, you like all of her confessionals and sitting there and trying to just like wrap her mind around how to say this and how to confess this and struggling to cope with what she's did. And is there ever a situation where taking a life is justified? Because, you know, maybe it wasn't quite as justified the last time, but this time Eclipso is definitely evil and he is definitely evil incarnate and there's no taking him to jail. So now it's coming up again. And if she does go down this path, does it just become easier and easier for her to kill? And obviously killing is wrong in the name of God. So then what does that do to her faith and you know, where she goes when she dies, and all these kind of like questions are like bubbling up. So I love the use of the church and her at certain moments during the episode going back to the church and trying to try again at this confessional and really trying to open up, because she's been isolated. And it's like, I guess this is another like thematic connection to the Supergirl episode, because Kelly, like both Kelly and Yelena, just feel like they've been isolated from all their friends. Their friends are like talking to them, but not like really understanding or really listening. You know, Yelena doesn't know how to like open up or go about it. So it just like the increasing isolation, you can feel it in the writing, you can feel it in the air, just in general with Eclipso being on the loose. I like the use of the hallucinations, because we as audience, along with Yelena, don't know which things are real and which things are not real until it becomes apparent later on. So I like that. I liked that when I was really scared for her the last time that she went to the confessional, because when it turned into something evil and it turned into Brainwave and she wound up like killing Brainwave again in her hallucination, I was so afraid that she was going to kill the real priest.
Oh my God, me too.
So I'm glad that Courtney was like there to help her and snap her out of it. But I think that the brainwave is an interesting twist because on the one hand, it's very easy. And I like that Courtney says, like, this is Eclipso. This is not, you know, you're not cursed or damned to hell or anything like that. But then again, Yolanda said, well, no, these have been like these headaches and things that she's been having have been happening since before Eclipso showed up, which we also saw in the premiere. So now, like, I'm confused. Like, is it brainwave or is it Eclipso? So that kind of, like, vagueness, like you guys said, is really interesting because we don't really know which way to go. And so we don't really know how to help Yolanda either. So I liked all of that. I liked the realistic team powwow and the difference of opinions. Because, you know, Courtney is, like, very, very optimistic. It's not your fault. You know, just trying to be helpful, but not really knowing what Yolanda needs. And then you have Rick, who's like, I would have killed him too, but then there's the fact that he didn't kill Solomon Grundy, so how can you say that you're a killer if you didn't kill the person that you're supposed to kill? and then obviously Beth is like, she's, you know, she's very honest in that she doesn't know. And so, you know, the whole where they fall on the to kill or not to kill spectrum, you kind of have to agree with Yolanda that, well, she is the only one on the team that would be able to do this. And is that something that she wants to be defined by, yes or no? So I thought it was a great, the ending was heartbreaking. I really hated that Courtney and Yolanda broke up. But I thought it was like a good heartbreaker, really good emotional beat to the story. I liked the difference, the compare and contrast between how, again, like I said, like the family dynamics, because you have Yolanda who didn't really have, like she has friends, but they don't understand. But she doesn't also have like a really strong family dynamic that would understand either. Versus Mike, in that when they're all sitting at the table and he's, you know, trying to explain his feelings about having accidentally killed Iceman and how understanding and comforting they are to him. And Yolanda doesn't have that either. So it's a whole lot of stuff going on there. And it was just a really good, really great character focus episode, and I'm scared for Beth.
You know, it also threw me off. This is not a like or a dislike, but the actor who plays Brainwave, I don't know, particularly in this episode, reminded me so much of Matt Letcher for a second. I was like,
oh, that's true.
So it took me a sec.
What did you not like, and why are you wrong? Just kidding. What did not spark joy?
Yeah, God, it's subjective. So the priest, like, breaking confessional or whatever you call it to go talk to Yolanda's mom, it's just anti-Catholic propaganda. If you can't go talk to your priest about thinking you murdered
snitches
someone...
Snitches get stitches, Mr. Priest.
Exactly. Who can you talk to? So that was not cool. Yeah, Yolanda's mom is just horrible, and I hate her, and I hate the way that they have portrayed Yolanda's family, and it's just so... I mean, I know that, like... that's part of who Yolanda is, I guess, but I just don't like it. So anyway, also, you know, the episode ended on such a downer. I didn't like that. So now I'm like just sad because Yolanda left the team for now. And also now concerned for Beth. Like, what's going to happen next? And obviously, like, on the one hand, obviously things will be okay, right? Like, obviously we're going to get the band back together and we're going to fight off the demons, etc. But on the other hand, so many children die in this show. Like, I don't know. And they have... introduced so many like potential quote-unquote replacements because they certainly aren't adding to the team, so I am actively worried that someone may be replaced. So that is, I guess, that does up the stakes. It's good because normally you're like, well, nothing's gonna happen, I'm in Gerdros, so I'm not even scared, but now I'm like, okay, I'm scared, thanks, unscare me, thank you. So yeah. Leave Beth alone, Bruce Eclipso, I hate you. I know that I guess you're saying that I'm wrong because I said I'm saying I wish she had lied to Yolanda. I'm sure Yolanda would still have left even if she had lied. But I was like, damn.
I don't think Beth would have been convincing.
Yeah. Beth would be like, yeah. Or Beth would have been like, yeah, we need you to kill people. Thanks. We really appreciate your murder instinct. But anyway, I know that would not have changed anything. But I winced when she said, I don't know. But what I really winced was when Mike did not know what wax on, wax off meant. And I was like, oh my God.
Oh my God.
I am as old as him. I am not as old as Mike. What is this? So So yeah, now I'm just feeling like generationally ancient. Thank you, Star Girl.
Were the 80s that long ago?
Right? Now I'm like, wait a second.
But yes, I agree about Yolanda's mom in general. Like, her family does suck, and it does suck in general that the... Because the beginning of the episode, I was like, but what happened to Yolanda's family? And then her mom shows up. I was like, right. Oh, and now I wish you didn't, because this just ruins everything. Because, like, her first instinct is to always blame, shame her daughter, make her feel small and insignificant, and not really talk to her about what it is that she's feeling, rather than being like concerned for her and why she keeps coming to see this priest about and why. Like, she doesn't even ask her how she is, and that's like really frustrating, especially since, you know, the family is not a white family. And it's like, I mean, we had this discussion last season too, but it's just continues to be irritating that they're not really shown to be super supportive. And, you know, it doesn't always have to be unrealistic, but at the same time, I wish they would show us different layers to her family besides just looking like the antagonists to Yolanda, which is very frustrating.
Like, 90%, like, all the parents except Barbara, like, suck.
That's true. Oh, Pat's on the shit list this year too, so yes, yes. that was like the main thing, I think, because everything else was just pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, it was a very good episode.
Yeah,
that was probably like one of the biggest bones I had to pick too, which is like, for one, the parents in the show are the worst TM, and I'm really annoyed because, like, also, like you said, the first time we saw Yolanda's family, they were not really understanding about her whole situation and blamed her. And then we don't see them really again. And this is the second time that we're seeing her family since that season one episode. And again, the mother goes straight to shaming her daughter and be like, why are you bringing the priest with your like little games or whatever, instead of trying to like understand or comfort her. And like, ma'am, something is seriously wrong with your child. Wrong enough that she didn't trust to tell you. Wrong enough that she's going to a priest with dark thoughts. Why wouldn't you talk to her and figure out like what is actually going on? What are you missing? So I don't like that the priest one snitched to her mom, and I didn't like that the priest number two had to tell her mom, hey, this is a safe space. Let's not yell at her. We need to help her. You know, like, that's just things that she should have known, first of all. And then I feel like towards the end, it just feels very regressive for Yolanda and trapping her in this closet instead of freeing her from it, that, you know, her mom blames Courtney as well. I'm like, you're a bad influence on my daughter. Stay away from her. Makes her quit her job. All these things that Yolanda gave Yolanda, like freedom to be wildcat, freedom to be with her friends, after being slut shamed at school. And it just feels like she's just going back into this like a little box. And it's difficult because we don't want that for her. So that's just, you know, it just increases like the isolation that she feels. And it's just like forcing her to suffer through her trauma on her own. Because even when she's stuck at home with like locks on her doors and chains, probably, she's, you know, like, there's no respite in her family either. And then the other thing, I'm just a little bit lost on Brainwave, and again, like, whether he's actually in her mind or if it's not. And I'm glad that Courtney brought up my thoughts, but I don't want Brainwave back. And I feel like it's a better story if this is something that Yolanda's mind is creating, like, this unhealthy way of, like, processing that guilt and how she'll overcome it. Or, like Tati said, like, this is, it'll be revealed that this is an Eclipsa thing. Because, again, she had headaches before, but we didn't really know if she had hallucinations with those headaches, because we just got like headache vibes. So Eclipso could be using those headache vibes to exacerbate the situation. Hopefully that's what it is. I would like that more than Brainwave actually being back and inside Yolanda, because that's just gross. And I was really just like, obviously very gutted when she just completely shuts down and pushes Courtney away. Quit the team. Great narratively, sucks emotionally. Stargirl feedback. Did Sonia send us some Stargirl?
Yes, we do have feedback, but before we get to that, I forgot to mention another dislike or just a curious thing, right? Like, there was a guy, the douchebag at the cafe was like, oh, if this wasn't Grumpy the Joe. Only, yeah, the only diner in Blue Valley. I'm like, so if this is the only diner in Blue Valley and such a small town and these weird things are happening, like, why is no one else talking about that?
Yeah,
why is it so silent?
Did you find out who put up a poster for Isa? Like, no one's missing that child. Like, come
yeah,
on.
Yeah, right? Like, so.
And why not also Cindy, if that's the case, then?
Yeah,
I guess they don't care about her either.
Or I guess they assume she left town, no one's seen her again, maybe. Right. I don't know. But
very weird behavior.
Still curious. Sonia has Stargirl feedback. She says, one nitpicky thing about this episode that really bugged me was the fact that the priest knew it was Yolanda in the confessional. Like, I know it's a small town and I'm not Christian and I don't know anything about confessionals, but doesn't that kind of defeat the purpose of it? Like, isn't it supposed to be anonymous? Also, I cannot believe he talked to Yolanda's mom about her. It's good he didn't reveal anything Yolanda said, and I was so glad when he called her mom out for being too judgmental, but still I'm annoyed that he did that.
Even if it's not anonymous, because, you know, sometimes the priests can know who you are. Like, you're not supposed to speak about what someone does in the confessional. Like, that's the whole, like, even
the
like, yeah, even
or
legally,
even like hint.
Yeah, even legally, they can't make you say what someone told you in a confessional as a priest. It's like a doctor-patient confidentiality. So it's ridiculous. I mean, I guess it's because she's a minor, but I was still like, what are you doing? Why are you telling the mom?
Yeah. It's tragic. Bad priest. I'm glad that Barbara is fighting for smaller towns that need help, and her idea of selling things for cash flow in the meantime was great. But honestly, what does the American Dream even do as a company?
I was like, is this still a great question? Thing? Did it not die with its owner?
Interesting to hear the shade and see his shadows that creepishly drip blood on the table. Hopefully they're able to save him and also potentially find Dr. McNider and Cindy in the process. I love Yolanda's co-worker as she always has her back. Also, I don't feel bad at all that Eclipso possessing the waitress made her drop scalding coffee onto this customer. He's a total douche. Oh my god. Also, LMAO at Yolanda not knowing creepy kid is actually Eclipso and giving him a lollipop. As a side note, blue raspberry is totally my favorite flavor and now I really want a lollipop. I died laughing at Cameron sneaking up on Courtney and her almost taking him down, but thought it was so cute they were hanging up Independence Day decorations together.
don't sneak up on people, Cameron.
I know, right? also, Mike being all like, wow, cool, this shard of a diamond is moving on its own. Yay. Like, boy, what the hell is that? That's not cool at all. That is terrifying. The Henry and Brainwave scenes were so frightening and also incredibly heartbreaking for Yolanda, and I just want to hug her. Rick and Beth finding out about Yolanda killing Brainwave broke my heart, but I don't agree with Yolanda about Rick and Grundy being the same as Grundy, as Grundy was forced to do bad things by the ISA, whereas Brainwave did terrible things because he wanted to. It's totally different for her to kill Brainwave and for Rick to have spared Grundy. I cried when Yolanda called herself the JSA member that kills and that her only role would be killing Eclipso. Also, I don't know if people are mad at Beth, but I was fine with Beth being unsure about whether or not to forgive Yolanda for it all, because it's normal for someone as kind as Beth to be conflicted. It's nitpicky, but I think they should have had Courtney or Rick tell Beth that her reaction was okay after she tearfully told Courtney she was sorry for how she reacted when
Did
Yolanda
they not
ran off.
Tell her that that was okay?
I think there was just like, you know.
It was like uncomfortable.
Unspoken.
Oh, yeah, I guess it was just like, oh.
Yeah. Brainwave.
But I mean, it's probably unspoken because they feel the same way. Like, they don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
she just gave voice to their feelings.
Right. Exactly. Right. Exactly. You know what? What should have happened is that Rick, is that his name? Rick? Should have just killed Solomon Grundy and then solved us this problem. Thanks a lot, Rick.
He might do it next episode. We don't know. Because Solomon Grundy is still Solomon Grundying.
That's true. So sad that Yolanda left the team and her mom is so terrible telling Courtney she's a bad influence and basically hanging up on Yolanda's coworker who was just trying to be helpful. Yay to Beth wearing a bonnet. If only Flash could do that with Iris. And Eclipson is now targeting Beth. Please, someone save her. And please have that someone be Rick so I can get more Our Night crumbs.
This guy has the barest minimum of crumbs, like when he looked to Beth, like, right, Beth? Say something. That was it. That was our Our Night interaction for the episode.
Yeah. A part of what doesn't make me, or the reason why I'm not so pressed about that is because it's not like anybody else is really getting anything either.
Cameron finally got some attention.
Courtney and Cameron are like also very
Very, very small.
I just see, right. Like, I mean, for me, I'm just like, Rick is like barely a person to me. He barely registers as a character.
I think he barely registers to the writers
too. Exactly. So I'm like, like, this is a major issue, a major roadblock in the way of their cute interactions. Hopefully, I hope that, I don't know. Like, I don't know how many episodes there are this season, but hopefully been
like 13.
Yeah, okay.
I'm playing that number out of my ass, but
we're like, coming up on. He needs to get something by the end of this season.
Well, not tomorrow. Next week is supposed to be a Rick heavy episode. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
maybe we will develop his character.
Oh, and since Beth is maybe the next target, maybe we'll get two birds with one stone.
Yeah.
Like his feelings for Beth.
Is that your prediction?
I guess that's my prediction. We will see Rick's feelings for Beth because we'll finally see Rick.
All right. May?
I do not have a prediction.
I think I'm going to go with the one that I kind of stumbled upon in my Joy No Joy section, is that I think that Yolanda's headaches and stuff are real, but the hallucinations is something that is exacerbated by Eclipso. I don't know how they will resolve that, but obviously like Yolanda's coming back to the team, but I feel like a lot of it has to do with her realizing that Eclipso is actually messing with her. So there we go. Moving on to our Lady of the Gumption of the Week's episode on Supergirl. Cause by default, there's no surprise. It shouldn't be, it's going to be Kelly. So. Spoilers. Side B is Supergirl, hold the space. So the title of this episode is called Blind Spots. Kelly is horrified when the Ormfield building implodes, injuring many in the community, including Joey. Sweet little Joey, Orlando's brother. They're all taken to the hospital and suffering from some kind of like dust inhalation. And, Kelly's trying her best to get resources for these people, but her horror quickly turns to frustration when she realizes that, the hospital is overwhelmed, people are getting sicker, no one's coming to help, including Supergirl and her super friends, who are too busy fighting, quote-unquote, the bigger problem, which was Nixley, who is not inexistent because she's not around, but they still got to fight her. Knowing that she can make a difference, and with the help of John Diggle, who was called in as a favor from her brother, James, Kelly embraces her power and fully steps into her role as guardian. She and John discover that the victims aren't getting better because the dust from the building was infused with fifth dimensional imp energy. And Councilwoman / Resident Karen, Jane Rankin, who used her connections, because she went to the same hospital as the people in the Heights, but she was like, this hospital is poor and I would like to upgrade. And so she used her connections to upgrade hospitals and receive an experimental drug, gene therapy drug, which cured her immediately. And the experiment from the drugs interacted with her fifth dimensional energy, giving her superpowers, basically. And she has been drawing on the energy from the victims of the Heights to advance her own corrupt gentrification agenda, because she is racist. Having reached her limit, Kelly takes the super friends to task for their neglect of poor, underprivileged communities, and chastened, they redirect their energy to helping the Heights. So, joined by Supergirl, Alex, Diggle, and the rest of the team, Guardian leads the way to restore justice to the fallen community and be the voice of the people. This episode was directed by David Ramsey and written by Jay Holtham and Ozzie Tesfaye. What sparked Woo! Joy?
I love Ozzie getting to write for her character. First off, I love that we got an episode that was really fully, truly focused on Kelly for like the first time ever. Like, I mean, we have had maybe once or twice an episode divided between Kelly and someone. Like, we recently got the episode where she met Orlando and Joey, but this is the first time it's really been like Kelly is indeed the A-plot without a doubt. And so it's great that Ozzie got to be a part of that and really help give voice to her character and to the internal monologue of her character for what feels like the first time. So obviously, because of that, the writing felt much more specific. It felt like the way that they were tackling the issues at hand was more realistic and approached it from many more angles. I liked, like, there was a lot of, like, not necessarily symbolism, but, like, events or plot points or characters standing in for a larger, there's a word for this, meta something. It doesn't matter. Point is, I liked how Cancelwoman Rankin.
Is that metaphor?
Well, not metaphor, but, like, it's like a metaphor, but it's like when you say White House, but you mean the U.S. government. Okay. I can't remember what the word is. It's like metonym. I don't, but it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Okay. So, the Cancelwoman serves the stand-in for, like, systemic racism overall, and also just, like, the failures of white feminism. But also, like, Kelly taking not just the Super Friends, but Supergirl specifically to task for not putting her money where her mouth is. And using the building collapse as a parallel to COVID, right? That portrays underfunding, medical racism, just the ways, like, who the government prioritizes and why. All of these were, like, really smart choices, and I don't know that they would have made them without Ozzy on board, like, helping write the episode. Just based on what they have done in the past, I don't know if they would have been as fleshed out as they are now. And while it was painful to witness, the Super Friends, including Alex, being too busy with Nixley and the quote-unquote bigger picture to focus on the suffering that Kelly was seeing right in front of her, it was really realistic that, like, even people with the best of intentions have, quote-unquote, blind spots. So I thought that they portrayed that really well. Also, even though I feel like James should have been in the episode, maybe, you know, he was busy filming or whatever, being all, you know, amazing because of Mortal Kombat or whatever it is. So it was nice that they had Diggle coming in as, like, an in-universe from James. Like, James sent Diggle to help Kelly with the situation. And I thought that the chemistry between David and Ozzy was really great. Like, you really got to, like, feel a relationship forming or a dynamic forming between Diggle and Kelly. And he directed, so shout out to him. He did a great job. And you, again, that's, like, that teamwork that is happening off screen that you then feel on screen when you're watching. So that was nice. Feels like a family affair. Also, I really loved the final Alex and Kelly scene when you see, like, the effort that Alex wants to put forward, and Alex is asking her, how can I support you? And I love that Kelly got to be like, you know, I need space, A, but I also need love. I need both simultaneously. It wasn't like a, no, I just can't do this right now.
Give,
like,
me go. Space, but also hold me.
Exactly. I love that. I thought that was really realistic and mm-hmm. also, like, the healthiest manner of handling that, too. Because, like, sometimes you say that you need space and you're really, like, back off, but you don't actually want to be, you know, you don't want to be left alone. You just, like, back off from asking me questions, but also right. still be
mental
here emotionally.
Space.
Exactly.
I need mental space for physical embrace.
Exactly. Yes. I also really liked the scene where John discussed, like, living in the skin of a black man. Because, like, the fact that it was a choice for him to live in this body. And yet, so how he experiences racism is different, and yet it has also contributed to how he experiences being an alien at all. But that, I thought that was a really interesting discussion. I feel like they've touched on it before, but this is probably the best way.
David has talked about it specifically, but I don't think he's ever
No, they've touched on it before.
Right?
They've touched on it before that he chose to be a black man. I think this was back when it may have been towards when they were doing, like, the alien storyline or whatever. But I liked it for a different adjacent reason, because of the mm-hmm. fact that he chose to live as a black man, but there are sometimes, especially in the recent, I think, like, the previous episodes, he doesn't really act like a black
right.
man, you know. Like, when, you know, Kara was trying to tell, like, Orlando and his group, he's like, okay, let's go back to jail. I would have expected, like, John to be like, wait a minute, you know. So it kind of feels like, and the way that he was talking about it, that, you know, he put on, he chose to be a black man as a reminder that he was alien or he was Martian and not part of Earth. So it was a way to kind of, like, ostracize himself, but also it just kind of seems like it's an admission that he was using a black man as a costume a little bit. Because he was also in that group of people that was not really paying attention to what Kelly was saying. So it was a nice, like, little check for him that, yes, you chose to be a Black man, but you're not really using your face as like a platform for any kind of social justice. So I like the conversation for that reason, because it, you know, at least now he's like, oh, I can't just like be a Black
right.
man. You know, right. I have to actually do something with it.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Where there's all your likes, my dear.
Those were all my likes. Okay. I mean, overall, very, very good episode. I'm very happy with it. Love that Orlando and Joy were a part of it again, and that Kelly continues to be like the link for their story. And that hopefully Orlando will now, you know, step onto the... Exactly. Exactly. We'll get that. So I would love to follow him on that journey.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to say I was like a little nervous because it's Supergirl at the end of the day. but I think because Ozzy was kind of writing from a perspective of her own, kind of, you know, she mentions writing a lot of things where she wishes she was able to say in real life, or is learning to be able to say them when she needs to. So I feel like all of that was put into the script with love and care, and a lot of detail as well, because I feel like other Supergirl writers wouldn't have been able to do this episode at all.
No.
And I think that, first of all, it was nice that, you know, we're continuing this.
They would have let Kara off the hook much more quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But I like, too, that it wasn't just, like, a singular episode, right? It's been sort of building up over the course of, like, 3 episodes. So it's not just, like, one of those. It didn't feel like a very special episode. Today we're going to talk about racism type of episodes. And it was kind of, like, the culmination of a lot of plot threads going on at the same time. I even like that the fact that they, you know, because Kelly wasn't in last week's episode, we got, here's what Kelly was doing 24 hours before, and tying that into with, you know, what was going on with Nixley and the super friends and all that stuff. And I think that, you know, like Tati said, it touched upon so many different things within the realm of systemic racism, housing, and, you know, how Black people are treated at hospitals even. And you saw a councilwoman, Rankin, you know, she desperately wants to go somewhere else immediately because, you know, she's going to get what she wants, and she has the power to get what she wants and
she gets
it on other people and better treatment, whereas everybody else tends to suffer. So it was really good at kind of like highlighting all of these different issues and also making it a very personal story as well, and not just like Kelly having to, you know, a light bulb moment when she has to help the community. But I like the fact that it was rooted in like exhaustion, as strange as that sounds, but like, you know, the everyday, just the weight of everything that goes on in the world and of racism and how it infiltrates everything, and like how no matter how we fight it, you know, systemically or otherwise and individually, it's just like it can be so hard to realize, you know, will anything ever change? And you see that in like her conversations with Brainy about, you know, what happened in the 31st century, like, is it better? And so all of those little things were good, and just like bringing it back to how Kelly was feeling as well as kind of filtering it out through the community. So it's like she wanted something specific from the super friends and they were not giving it to her because of their blind spots. And then she had to like, it sucks that she had to break down for them to listen to her, but like that is the reality of a lot of things, right? So it was just really nice to see her not only take charge, but to also force her friends into uncomfortable situations because they had the privilege to not have to see that because they were so concerned with like the bigger picture, and like also tying it back to superheroes and the bigger picture, because it's always like, we need to stop aliens from taking over the world, we need to like do this save this town from a nuclear explosion or something really big, whereas like this was big but it didn't seem that way because it wasn't, you know, it didn't seem as urgent, like no one was immediately like, I don't know, gonna blow up or something.
Yeah. It's kind of like when, you know, superheroes have a fight in like the middle of a city with like a bad guy and they're like destroying buildings and all this other shit, and then they're like, but we caught the bad guy.
But look what you did. Yeah, exactly. So I like that this episode really kind of like brought it back to the grounded superheroism and, you know, what that means and what that looks like every day. So it was really, it was just a really well done episode. It was very emotional as well. And I think that it really hit the nail on the head of what it was trying to say, and also furthering the story of the, you know, overarching plot in general. So it was just really, really well done. The writing was really good. I think Ozzy knocked it out of the park in terms of like writing and acting, because I feel like you could just feel how tired she was and how emotional she was throughout this whole episode in trying to like make people listen and just be there for her. And I think that it really shows how carefully crafted this episode was for it to have kind of touched upon all of these things at the same time and still feel like a Supergirl episode.
Yeah. And I like Ozzy, like I totally agree with you. It was, she hit it out of the park. And also like what you said, because she's tackling a lot of things and it is very strong messaging. But there's also the benefit of being the perspective of coming from a Black woman. Because like if this was like Supergirl normal writers, you know, we already went through that route with like the alien immigration, how it hit kind of like all the notes in the wrong way. But this, it doesn't feel like, you know, when Batwoman had Ryan, you know, I am not a statistic and here are the blah, 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 blah. Like it did not feel like someone was copying all the notes from their diversity panel. And that's because it's coming from the perspective of a Black woman. And, you know, if you really wanted to know what it feels like, I think people get like a really good sense of that. And Kelly's like increasing exhaustion about not really being listened to, not really being seen. And I feel like as a character, and she only has this one episode to do this because this is the only episode Ozzy is writing.
Right.
So she has
right.
to get like all of the things that she's wanted for Kelly in all the season that she's been on Supergirl into this one episode. And I think that she did a really good job of doing that because, and we've talked about this before, like Kelly doesn't really get a lot of storylines or, and a lot of the ones that she is in, it's basically as someone else's therapist. So we've talked about before how Alex kind of uses her as like a free therapy session sometimes for what's going on in Alex's life, but doesn't really ask about what's going on in Kelly's life. Or, you know, those kind of like situations where Kelly is just like the support, it felt like, for a long time. And so it was great to kind of see her coming into the forefront. And then also you kind of feel that in her exhaustion too, that, you know, she's been the support for so many people, but when she needs that support back, it's not there for her. I really liked when she was like first at the hospital and she starts noticing, you know, they don't have any beds, they don't have any ventilators, and they don't have all this kind of stuff. She calls Alex. Alex is busy. You know, all these kind of things are like happening and no one's really caring. And she makes that phone call to James, and you could kind of, you know, the fact that she was like, I just wanted to vent to someone that I knew would understand, I thought was very personal, very powerful. And I think Ozzy delivered the, you know, emotion of that scene really well. I love that James called John and John came there, because like John and Kelly haven't met before. So the conversation that they had, I really loved as well, because John is another person who knows what Kelly is going through, knows how she feels like innately. And he's very like patient with her. He's very kind. They develop this kind of brother sister bond very quickly, just through their shared experiences of being Black in America and knowing how things get and having to deal with white coworkers who, you know, require proof before they act and all this kind of stuff. So I love their team up and the way that they started to kind of work together and, you know, going through and solving this problem and stepping up for the community when the supposed good guys are away. Because like a lot of times that we do have to, you know, step up for our communities because it's often overlooked by, you know, the police, the government, and all these other agencies that are not looking out for us, and we have to step up and do it ourselves. But I really like that John was making sure to ask her if she was okay. And she was like, no, I'm fine. I'm good. And he was like, but it's okay. Like, you know, it's okay to be strong. It's good to be strong, but you also need to make sure that you're not missing warning signs. Cause I feel like that was a really important thing, that, you know, we kind of miss in our day-to-day lives about, you know, we have to go out to the marches, we have to stand up and we have to fight and we have to do all this kind of stuff. And you don't really realize how much of an emotional toll it's taking on you, how much it is sucking out of you to have to be so brave all the time. So I really liked that conversation. I thought it was a great conversation between those two. I think as frustrating as it was in the episode, whenever Kelly tried to reach out and someone, you know, too busy or whatever, I thought it was, you know, it was also really interesting because Kelly should be in a position of strength here. You know, she's not just an, a normal Black person from the Heights. She is a Black person that knows Supergirl, and she knows Super Friends. She has all these high people in high places that she can just call up on the phone and be like, hey, I need some ventilators. But that's not really helping her. You know, she's still in that place where she feels like she should be in a position to do so much, but it's not working, and it's not, and it kind of like helps to add to the frustration that she really feels and like builds up until she actually unloads on everybody. And I think that also the reactions were pretty good and varied and kind of like were reminiscent of, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement and how certain white people responded to the realization that Black Lives Matter, or maybe that, you know, their Black friends had been going through things that they didn't know about, you know, because Kara is kind of like in this situation, oh my, but I'm an alien too. And I, you know, I just did not, blah, 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 because I thought we were doing, and, you know, Kelly had to kind of stand her ground and be like, you were, you know, which I think is debatable. Because I have issues with that whole alien storyline, because I feel like Kara was naive there too. And how
she was, Kara just aliens. Discovered racism and alienism. Yes,
she did just discover those. But she was more in tune with the alien thing because she is an alien, and it's uniquely to her perspective of being an alien on a planet. So I like that Kelly kind of made that distinction of her and kind of was like, well, I don't need your guilt right now. I don't need your, you know, sorry, guilt is not an active emotion. That was another thing that I liked. The guilt is not an active emotion. You need to start like focusing on what you can do and moving forward, and not just that you feel guilty. Cause that's like, it's like an inward thought that you feel guilty, and it's about you not feeling good. And, you know, I'm not here to make you feel right. better. You right. need to like, just, you know, this is what happened. So now what do you need to do to move forward? And the other one, Alex, was just like horrified. Like, oh my God. I thought that, you know,
she thought she was getting dumped.
She was just so like horrified that she missed all the signs that Kelly was going through. And, you know, she thought she understood because she's a queer woman, and Kelly's a queer woman. And, you know, like they've been discriminated against, and she thought she knew what all the discriminations, and she went out and bought books and like white fragility and all this kind of stuff. And again, like, she's like, you know, bombarding Kelly almost with questions about what can I do? How can I, like, overly eager. But again, like you said, you know, Kelly also saying like, you know, I need some space. Like, I don't want to have to answer all these questions for you. And because a lot of times, you know, this all this stuff is like happening to the person as well. And, you know, she's said it, and it's something that she hasn't said for a while. And now that it's out in the air, she has to unpack all the stuff that she held down and she, you know, held inside her for so long. So even she doesn't really know how she feels about all the things. So again, Alex being like, as much as she's like, how can I help you? You know, I love you so much. Please tell me what to do. That's a you thing, Alex. That's like, how can I feel better about this situation? And, you know, all be a good ally. And sometimes it is just kind of like, hold the space. Let's park this, you know, and come back to it at a different time, or, you know, wherever. So I did like that ending conversation. I love the scene of Kelly, like, wrapping her hair and the Say Her Name, like, t-shirt. And just the fact that she doesn't ever make Kara or Alex feel better about themselves. Like, it's not, because it's not about them. So I actually also like that. And I like the fact that she didn't try to kind of, like, brush over anything that was said. It's just kind of out there, and then she just needs some time to figure out how she wants to move forward as well. So I just think that it was just all around like a really good episode, very cathartic episode, I feel, probably for Ozzy. And yeah, there was, yeah, it was just like, it was just one of like a highlight episode, I think, for this season. Obviously, I love that her transformation into Guardian, that Bernie designed her suit and gave it an upgrade. Fighting Jean Rankin and Guardian being the one that is ultimately like the superhero friends were there to assist her, and she was the main event, so to speak. And I like that she has a deeper connection with the residents of the Heights, even though he didn't recognize her. I still think it was, you know, a good realistic thing that Orlando didn't trust Guardian, because, you know, just like all those other people. And the fact that she understood that, she didn't kind of like try to be like, I'm not like those other superheroes. You know, she's like, trust needs to be earned, and I will do that for you. So I feel like it makes it stronger connection between her and the people. And I like the, finally, the conversation that she had with Kara, where she said, you know, you take care of the big things. You take care of like Nixley and, you know, alien invasions, all that kind of stuff. I want to be the hero for the people. So you've got like the big, the macro and the micro, and Guardian is like being firmly established for like the micro. And I really like how that's setting up her legacy. Okay. No Joyce.
Well, first I'll say the word was metonymy. That was the word I was looking for, even though I was not, you know, I was using metonymy as metonymy, but I couldn't remember what it was. So it just didn't work at all. But metonymy was the word. Anyway, what I did not feel joy from, first off, thanks, Brainy, for telling us that racism is just still around in the 31st century. But he was like, yeah, no.
Sad times, man.
I was like, wow, there is no
I feel like they could have adapted that. Like, you know, maybe not the same issues, but right. Issues also evolve because people are still sucky.
Exactly. Like, I was like, this is so bleak. But yeah. Anyway, I'm glad that he did say, like, you could change things now. Who knows what the future holds, actually? Like, all right, cool. But anyway, I also think, like, it was a lot that Ozzy had to pack into one episode, which she did really well. But the fact that she has to, because the show has been ignoring Callie's perspective and, like, importance to the narrative for, like, the better part of two seasons, is unfortunate. And I mean, thankfully, it's not really thankfully, but like there isn't much time left for them to continue to do that, but you know they are, right? This was the chance. So that in and of itself is like not bad for the episode, but just a downer thought, I guess, while watching the episode.
Yeah.
Also, it's just Orlando not recognizing Kelly in a mask. Like, he spent all episode with her, and then she comes back, and it's not like her voice is even different.
She had lipstick and braids. I mean,
yeah. Like,
it's like, okay. Or not that perceptive, I guess.
But I was like, okay. Also, like, I know that it was to drive the point home, and because this is, like, a thing that does happen, but, like, the Super Friends were just so unlikable in this episode with the way that not only they were brushing Kelly off, but also being like, we have to deal with a bigger issue. Like, I'm sorry, we have to deal with, like, real concerns. And I was like, are they real? Are they bigger? Y'all, I want to give shout out to Nia for being, like, the only one that, like, for, like, yes. 2 seconds, like, yeah. Oh, well, take this, because you might be right. But even that is like, you are correct. Yes. I don't need Mia to be like, oh, it's possible.
Mia is the only ally.
You know what? Who else wasn't part of the problem? William, officially the best character, wasn't even there because he would have helped. Yep. That's
he would have
right.
helped. Yeah. Because Andrea was on some bullshit. William would have been down there on the streets.
But anyway, yes. Andrea, another ass. She had one episode of being good to Lena, and then, of course, she goes right back to being the worst. And then also, speaking of Lena, she's, like, there to, like, get a magic book or whatever. And I know Jessica will much more eloquently say she's also part of the problem. But why, like, again, it's just further delaying whatever they're going to do with her magic arc, which seems like it's just going to be a Deus Ex Machina. So, like, why is it here? The end. It's not necessary. Okay.
Yes, this episode reeked of white women privilege, like Lena, like Andrea, who's like, I'm sorry, Kelly, people are just so focused on traffic right now. It's what makes me mad about local news. Like here when it snows, for example, it's like half an hour dedicated to snow. I'm like, okay, guys, we're getting a couple inches. What else is happening in the community? And I feel like she wants to have CatCo be this renowned publication, and she's doing jack squat to actually make it so, because she's focused on all of the wrong things. It's like, you know, you have a point about the Super Friends sometimes focusing on them so they can get viewers in, but then you should also start talking about the things that do matter, because traffic is only temporary. And this was not. So I feel like she just did a shit job on that front. And then Lena, other than not being a good friend to Kelly, but also like, she's like, oh, I have to go help my friends. And I'm like, well, it took you all episode to come back. So like, why did you come back so early? It did not make any sense. And Green Lantern issue. I know that they had to shoehorn that into this episode, but I feel like the promise of more Green Lantern in the future is like a threat to me, because I'm tired.
I know. Explicit, because he said that he had an offer.
His world's away. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's definitely Green Lantern, but it's like, for people who don't know what that means,
right,
it's not going to make any sense. So just,
I feel like Guggenheim is just like drawing it out because he doesn't have permission from WB yet. So he's like, to be continued into next season.
Right. Like, okay, is he going to be in the HBO Max show? Doubtful. So then why are we dragging out the storyline if it doesn't have a real conclusion and we're not going to actually see him?
They're probably trying to like build a case, a business case for putting him in the HBO Max show, and WB's just like, no. He's like, we'll try again next season. We'll get you the numbers you want to see. Like, no.
Because it's just funny, because he was talking to Kelly about like, oh, you know, I got an offer, but that, and then yeah, I thought about having to be away from my family and stuff. But I'm like, but you've been hopping from like Metropolis to Central City to National City. That's taking you away from your family too,
dude. You're doing a lot of traveling, sir.
Yes. So that's like irritating.
I totally just like erased that from my mind, so it wasn't even in my note drawer. So I was like, nothing relating to Diggle Lantern is going to affect me.
A wise decision.
Are those all of your no joys?
Yes.
Yeah. So Lena, I feel like she didn't need to be in this episode. Like, I guess it needed it to set up. Like, it doesn't even really seem apparent that her magic will be of use next week. So again, I don't really know why they included it. Just kind of felt like something they had to shoehorn in, but it was just out of whack with everything else that's going on. You have this really like emotional story going on in the Heights, and then you have Lena learning a magic trick, and it's just like not connecting. Also, it's not lost on me that Lena ignored Kelly's text and only went back for her quote unquote friends because of the news story that was on top of that text about CatCo and that big giant blue cat. So she saw the super fans were fighting Kat, and she went back. And that's what we saw in last episode where she showed up there. But she never texted Kelly back to follow up with her. And she was absent for Kelly, like cussing everybody else. So she didn't really catch the fade from that one. Also, I feel like, because it would bother me that there's that throwaway line that Kelly's helping people, blah, 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 that Alex said in the previous episode. And we were like, oh, well, that's just because she's, Ozzy is preparing for this next episode. But honestly, I feel like looking at it 2020 now, it just further highlights the fact of how neglectful they were, that she only got that one throwaway line in the previous episode about, because it just made it seem like her issue was not that big of a deal, the way that it was kind of a throwaway line in that episode. So it just kind of further highlights the fact that they were really not focusing on anything that was going on in Kelly's world, despite the fact that she tried to ask them multiple times for help. So, you know, and I really, like, I feel like it was a great scene of her unloading on everybody, but if they weren't going to show Lena as part of the problem, again, then that should have been another reason not to show Lena at all, because she was definitely part of the problem. And I feel like they never addressed the fact that she didn't text Kelly back. And then speaking of people that should be cussed out and weren't, Andrea better not have shit to say. Like, I don't want to hear anything you have to say about CATCo and their ratings. Because when you will know why, you know, because you thought traffic was more important than like a government corruption community disaster story, which is insane. Like, why wouldn't you focus on that? Why wouldn't you go down there and see what's happening? It's a whole fucking building fell for no reason. Like, why wouldn't you send somebody down there to figure out what happened? And it's also, I feel like it's quite interesting that Andrea can bend over backwards and pull strings to find people that don't want to be found for Lena. Mm-hmm. Up in Newfoundland, but she can't use her immense power to do a goddamn thing for Kelly,
right?
Who is her friend and previous employee that went through all that shit with her last year with her tech company, supported her, only to lose her job when the tech part fell and collapsed. So, I mean, that again, like, you know, I was saying, you know, Kelly is supposed to have all of these connections. She has all these people in power. She's got a speed dial for Supergirl, can't get Supergirl to return her calls. She has knows the boss of a media empire, can't get her to, you know, it's just, you know, it's ridiculous. And it's just so frustrating in general to have everybody just be that oblivious and that cavalier to Kelly's cries for help and just the situation in general. So I agree with you that, you know, part of it is to be so extreme to make the point, but still not bringing joy at all.
Right.
Feedback.
Yes, we have three people who gave us feedback about Supergirl, starting with Shang, who says, literally, how long would it take for Kara to carry over some respirators for the hospitals? I'm pretty sure Ms. Zor-El could ring up Lena to get respirators from the Luther Hospital and carry them all in one big fishnet within 10 minutes max.
That's another thing. Lena has a fucking hospital.
Yes. The plot about hospitals not having enough respirators in lower income areas while rich white crackers can pay their way was very on the nose. But didn't feel distasteful at all. Definitely better than the past episodes of the writers' attempts at whatever weird feminism or political stale bread they tried to bake out. It felt so real, and heck, it is. Right now in today's world, I liked how they phrased the Super Friends' blindness as a fixation on the bigger culprit. It's something many superhero shows overlook. What happens to the people in the cities when the heroes are out only fighting the big bads? This one episode accomplished more than whatever the fuck the Agent Liberty arc was. And even though I know the writers would probably forget whatever the fuck what that was, this gold nugget of an episode, I sure hope I see more of this on other shows. I honestly didn't feel like Lena should have appeared in this episode. It felt so out of place. Could have placed it in last week. Not sure if it's because Katie is a season regular and has to appear in every episode, but it was just weird. And kind of feel like she's given a pass in the whole you don't see the people on the ground talk by Kelly.
Yep.
When she's the richest out of all of them and definitely have used her class, money, and race to turn a lot of things in her favor. I actually like Diggle this episode. Also, is he having his own show or are we having some Green Lantern thing? Your guess is as good as ours.
Don't put that in the universe.
Diggle has always been all of his rock.
Oh, I'm guessing it's going to be in the crossover, right? It's going to be part of the crossover?
No, yeah, he is in the crossover. Yeah, that's and true. There are aliens in that crossover. Damn
that's
it.
That's true. more GL. Diggle has always been Oliver's rock, and I liked how he was the one that kept Kelly down to her roots, too. I know some people think Kelly doesn't need to be guardian and can make change just as a social worker, but I think she can protect the neighborhood through her social work, as well as helping them fight off thugs physically as a guardian. She can be a hero at both, and I hope we see her do that in the remaining episodes. This whole episode, honestly, Kelly first getting so anxious about the children, then her getting increasingly annoyed at the Super Friends, and finally her big talk with the Super Friends. Then Alex talked with John, Diggle's talking with Kelly, lots of talking. It's great stuff. In Kelly's one-on-one with Kara and Brainy, fuck me over. They're such great scenes. Ozzy understood the assignment. She understood the assignment so well, it'll give her a PhD for it. I'll give her a PhD for it. From the dialogue between the characters to Ozzy's acting, the first 10 minutes already got me a sucker punch, and I continued to cry 5 times over this whole episode. Immaculate. Did my predictions all go down to shit? I still think Kelly gets the courage totem, though. If they do the whole Captain Planet combine all totems thing in the finale, The promo is interesting, though. Too much courage. Sounds like the Supergirl writers reach over into the Legends writing room for some notes. I think Lena will create Periwinkle Kryptonite. It causes a person to lose their inhibitions. So if a person has courage, they would lose it because it increases their fear, and fear is the opposite of courage. Or perhaps it's just a gauntlet to suck fifth dimension magic. El Mariah Shang. Mm-hmm. Sonia says, let's see. This episode was amazing. Ozzy is clearly as talented of a writer as she is an actress, because this was honestly one of the best episodes of the season. The scenes with the hospital in the Heights being underfunded and under-resourced was terrible, as was seeing the councilwoman looking down on the hospital demanding to be taken to another one while only caring about herself and the corporations. Who the heck are these doctors that aren't noticing this blue glow? Like, my goodness, what med school did you go to? Love the phone call to James, even though I wish we could have had even a voiceover by McCod to show him on the other line with Kelly, but it was great that he sent Dig over to check on Kelly. I didn't even know James knew Dig, as James was never part of any crossovers, as is the case with most POC, but it's nice to know they are at least acquaintances. Andrea going back to being a little shit this episode after being so good last episode to Lena and being all, no one cares about the Heights, we need better stories. Yet all she's covering is traffic. Who the hell cares about traffic? And Andrea is so annoying. Loved Orlando's speech and how Kelly protected him from the councilwoman's bodyguards. Also, the fight between Dig and the bodyguards was great. Knife's reference to Green Lantern, with Dig saying he had an opportunity to be a special kind of hero. Love John bringing up that he chose to present to the world as a black man, but also that people like James, Dig, and Kelly don't get to choose like he does. Glad Kara still went through with the plan to take down the councilwoman, despite that they wouldn't be able to find Nixley. Love Kelly and Brainy scenes and their conversation about the 31st century and how things are better but not perfect, and how Kelly is such an amazing hero that can make a difference in the here and now. And it's so amazing he had so many designs for her suit. It looked fantastic, and she saved everyone. Wondering what the world's await line is referring to. Green Lantern. Nice thing.
Spoiler.
Lena learning about her powers and getting the grimoire, is that how you say it, from Francine, yeah, in the mail, and seeing how that ties
in. I don't know why she couldn't just take it with her. I know. Like, you were there in the same place.
That's
girl.
True. Kelly and Alex at the end of the episode was so heartwarming. Also, so glad to see, even though Kelly clearly doesn't have her natural hair, much like Iris in The Flash, they showed her putting the scarf on. I hope the Flash writers saw this episode and will start doing that with Iris. Again, this was such an amazing episode. Can't wait to see more of Kelly and being a fighter for the people in later episodes. Thank you so much, Sonia. Suarez says, that was one of the best episodes of Supergirl and DCTV, and followed in the vein of Batwoman Season 2 by deftly connecting social justice issues to superheroes. This is how it's done. Ozzy and Jay Holtham crafted an amazingly detailed script. For example, seeing her at an Ethiopian restaurant at first, along with David Ramsey's direction, captured dynamics we don't often see brought to the forefront of superhero stories, even though we should have far more. Let's see. This and Batwoman, at least from my viewpoint, hold on. They take a harder look at how this impacts the black and brown people affected, allowing them to more fully and accurately convey how they've been affected by systemic racism, violent policing, and other injustices. Ozzy's performance was mesmerizing, and this is probably the best and most heartbreaking work she's had as Kelly yet. I cried a few times while watching, especially as we could tell Ozzy drew from personal experience. While I'm sad that Supergirl is ending and that we likely won't get a Guardian spinoff, although hopefully she shows up in more DCTV, I'm very encouraged by her sharing the news that she's writing on other shows. Yes, that's true. So Ozzy is writing for other shows. We don't know which ones, but that's very exciting for her.
Yeah, I love that. Mm-hmm.
She's clearly an excellent writer, and I'm so glad she's found her passion for it and can't wait for what she writes on next. Seeing the Super Friends, and especially Kara and Alex, be held accountable for ignoring what the community went through was immensely gratifying. The white councilwoman from last episode being a literal personification of a wealthy elite leeching off black and brown, yeah, was very well done, and it was so great to see her get justice in the end, even though that is ultimately a fantasy we don't see much of in real life. But holding white elites along with other perpetrators of white supremacy is something we should continue striving for. We should have had this on the show years ago, and I hope we have it far more in superhero storytelling in general. Alex's encouragement she had from and conversations with Diggle was really great, and the ending with Alex was incredibly moving and probably relatable for so many black viewers watching. Even though the season is ending, I'm very glad that we had this episode. Thank you so much, everyone, for your feedback. And yes, it was a great episode, so I'm glad everybody liked it. And that's all.
Yay!
Yay! this concludes our episode, because obviously Kelly is Lady of Gumption of the Week. This is not debatable.
I was about to be like, wait a second. Better give Kelly her props. Yes. And I guess, well, actually, no, I don't even know. I don't even know, because, like, I would say Yolanda for Stargirl, but not, yeah, she didn't have gumption. It was just, you know.
No, she ran away. Like, exactly. Yes.
So anyway, yeah. So Kelly is just going to take one for both of them.
Yes. And hopefully Yolanda will find her gumption again sometime before the end of the season.
Yeah.
But anyway, you can come back and see us next week, where we, same bat time, same bat place, where we discuss Stargirl and Supergirl. Oh, by the way, I don't know if we said this in the news, but Doom Patrol season 3 is out now, so watch it. Woo! And if you want to hear us talk about it, then you can come to Patreon, where we will discuss it. But if you do not want to go to Patreon, then you can come back next week here. If you have your feedback, you want to send it to us at ladieslubbygumption@gmail.com, or send us ask on Tumblr, ladieslubbygumption.tumblr.com. I am caught up on Titans, although I will probably not be as enthusiastic. I haven't seen this week's episode, but, you know, you can also send us your Titan thoughts. Or you can follow along with us as we live tweet at DCTVGumption on Twitter. So, see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye. Bye.